We want to study together today about 10 sins of the tongue. 10 sins of the tongue. This little short article entitled, I Am Your Tongue. I am your tongue. I am small and pink. One end is fastened. The other end goes wag, wag, wag. The Bible mentions me about 215 times. Read Proverbs 18:21 and 21:23 to see what an important fellow I am. When I say kind words, thoughtful words, true words, it makes other people happy, and it makes you happy. When I say mean words, angry words, whining words, untrue words, there is trouble for others and trouble for you. You cannot say a word without me, but I never say a word without orders from you. You are the boss. When you have hurt someone, you try to excuse yourself by saying, oh, that was just a slip of the tongue. I didn't mean it. Well, boss, don't pin the blame on me. The slip was further back along the line in your thoughts and in your feelings. The things you don't mean to speak have a meaning all the same. Your tongue gives away the secrets of your heart. Jesus understood this very well, for he said, for out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. For by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned. There's no such thing as a slip of the tongue, for the tongue speaks only what it is commanded to speak. James 1:26 says, if any man among you seem to be religious and bridleth not his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. James 3:5, 9, and 10. You know, the tongue weighs only a few ounces, and yet it is quite probably the hardest part of your body to control. That little piece of flesh in your mouth. And yet it causes so much heartache and so much trouble. In fact, I know James says that if anyone doesn't sin in word, if he doesn't sin with the tongue, then that's a perfect man. And so that would put Jesus in that category and none of the rest of us. All of us commit sin with our tongue at one time or another in our lives. Many of us, on a regular basis, commit sins with our tongue. Let's look at a few of these things that we need to be avoiding. Number one, cursing. Now, cursing, a lot of times when people say cursing, they mean cussing. There is a difference between the two. Cursing is actually the process of condemning another person to hell. That's cursing someone. Or calling down the wrath of God, or calling down some other evil thing upon that person. These aren't just the dirty little cuss words that people say flippantly and that don't mean what they intend for them to mean. It's not that kind of thing. Cursing is actually to speak of someone in a derogatory sense, to put them under a curse. That's what cursing truly is. And that's what James chapter 3 and verses 9 and 10 says happens. He says, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. So there he explains, we bless God and curse men with the same tongue, the same mouth that we sing praises to God, we turn right around and say horrible things about each other. We curse others with that tongue. It's a sinful thing. How can we curse other people who were created in the image of God? The second thing that we want to notice is flattery. Now there is a difference between complimenting someone and flattery. Sometimes I think the impression has been given that if you say anything nice to somebody, anything complimentary at all, that you're somehow flattering, trying to flatter them. The flattery is when we either A, are saying things that would be complimentary but that are untrue, or B, we're using that complimentary statement to try to gain some advantage. In other words, we're trying to manipulate that person for some reason, to our own gain, by saying that kind, seemingly complimentary thing to them. We're trying to trick them in some way. Psalm 12 and verse 3. The psalmist says, they speak vanity, every one with his neighbor. With flattering lips and with a double heart do they speak. The Lord shall cut off all flattering lips and the tongue that speaks proud things. When we flatter, when we say either things that aren't true, or we try to manipulate people by saying things to ingratiate ourselves to them so that they'll do something for us, that's deceitful. That's flattery. And we need to watch out for that. We need to beware of the danger of getting involved in flattery. Notice verse 3 said, the Lord shall cut off all flattering lips. God does not appreciate flattery. It's similar to what Jesus said of the people of his day. And he said, it's the same thing that Isaiah had said of the people of his day and their relationship with God. This people draw nigh unto me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Sometimes we do that with God. We say all sorts of flattering things about God. Hear people say all sorts of wonderful things about how much they love the Lord and how wonderful God is, but then they don't really mean it. They don't live according to that. And we do the same thing with people as well. We'll say things that seem so nice and so kind, but we don't really mean it. We have that double heart that Psalm 12:2 spoke of. The third that we want to notice is lying. Revelation 21:8 says, but the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. You know, we sometimes think of lying as not such a big deal. But look at the group of people that Revelation lumps in together with the liars. Look at that, with murderers, with idolaters, and sorcerers. And there's the liar right there in the midst. The one who won't speak the truth. The Bible commends us on several times throughout the New Testament. There's several cases of the Bible encouraging us to speak the truth. Let everyone speak the truth with his neighbor. Speaking the truth in love and so forth. Several times that's commanded and we're encouraged to do that. Sometimes we lie for various different reasons. Sometimes we lie to try to get ourselves out of trouble. Sometimes we lie to try to make somebody else feel good. Sometimes we lie to get some selfish gain out of it. But whatever the motive behind the lie, It's still a lie. And God condemns lying. The fourth thing that we want to notice that our tongues often get us involved in is talebearing, or gossip, we would call it today. In the King James, it refers to talebearing. Leviticus 19 and verse 16. Beginning really back in verse 15, he says, "You shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. You shall not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. But in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. You shall not go up and down as a talebearer among your people. Neither shall you stand against the blood of your neighbor. I am the Lord." The Bible tells us that gossiping, telling tales, being a tale bearer, one who carries stories from one place to another, from one person to another, spreading those things, that kind of an individual stirs up strife. They cause problems wherever they go. And if someone will gossip to you about someone else, you can rest assured they will gossip about you to someone else. So we need to beware of the dangers of gossip and tale bearing. The dangerous sin of the tongue that has caused a lot of problems for a lot of people. The fifth that we want to notice is harsh criticism. We sing that song, "Angry words, a weapon never, from the tongue and bridled slip." Now there's the harshness and the anger and the mean things that we say to others are a dangerous thing. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 24, Jesus addresses this. He says, "You have heard that it was said by them of old time, 'You shall not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment.' But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, 'Raca,' shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, 'You fool,' shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has aught against you, leave your gift there before the altar, and go your way and first be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift." But Jesus makes it clear that saying harsh things, calling people names, raca and fool, and of course we have hundreds more that we may call people today. There are tons of different names that people are called. Harshly criticizing them for all sorts of things. And yet, Jesus says, doing those things endangers our soul. I remember as a young person in high school, it was a game of sorts. Sitting around the lunchroom table, for a couple of people at the table to get into a name-calling contest to just see who could say the meanest, ugliest thing to the other one. It was a game. It was something that people amused themselves with. And yet it's something that Jesus tells us we should avoid. I guess during this political season, we may hear some grown-ups doing some of those things as well. Now, when we talk about harsh criticism, however, it doesn't mean that we can never legitimately criticize someone else. If someone has done something that they shouldn't, it's perfectly good and perfectly right for them to be called on that. And sometimes we've gotten to the point in our society that anytime you say anything that's not positive about someone, well, how could you say that? You're judgmental. You're being mean. You're being ugly. You can't do that. But the fact of the matter is, while we are to do it in love, the Bible tells us to speak the truth. And sometimes speaking the truth does mean that we criticize. It means that we call out the wrong. We call out the sin. We call out the shortcomings that people have in their lives. It's because of our love that we do that, though. It's not just to be mean or to put ourselves up on some pedestal or to knock someone else down off of their pedestal. That's not the point. The point is to be honest and truthful with that person in the hopes of helping them to save their souls. And when we do it with the proper attitude and the proper spirit, then it's not a harsh criticism, it's a truthful and needed criticism. And all of us at some point in time need to face criticism. We all need to face up to the fact that we're not perfect, and we all need to be called out on some particular action that we've taken that wasn't right. And when that happens, we need to accept that and realize, especially when it comes from another member of the church, in love because of their concern for our soul. But of the harsh criticism, of just calling people names and saying cruel and mean things to them with no hope of correcting the problems that they may have in their lives, is not something that's beneficial, and it is a sin to do that. The sixth thing we want to notice is backbiting. Romans chapter 1 and verse 30 lists backbiters in a list along with haters of God and inventors of evil things. Backbiting. Stabbing somebody in the back. Talking about them when their back's turned, when they're not there to defend themselves, like J.L. did to Hazel this morning. Talked about her when she wasn't here. She wasn't here, so he got to say those things. I'll let him tell you what he said about you. He said, I wouldn't say this if she was here. No, that wasn't backbiting. That was a kind thing, he said. But we do have a tendency to do that. We have a tendency to not say something to someone's face, but to say it behind their back. Now, obviously, sometimes when we're complimenting somebody, we just don't want them to get the big head. And so that's why we do that. But we do have a tendency to backbite, say things mean and nasty behind someone's back, to cause harm to them and their reputation by doing that. Backbiting is very closely akin to the gossip that we talked about earlier and the tale-bearing. And we've got to beware of that because we do have a tendency toward that at many times in our lives. Also, as long as we're in Romans chapter 1 and verse 30, boasting is mentioned as a sin of the tongue. Boasters are mentioned there in Romans 1:30. It's good to be confident. We should have confidence. We should have an air of knowing our abilities and our limitations. But to be a braggart, to be one who boasts all the time, always tooting our own horn about how great we are, is something that people get tired of very quickly. But what's more, boasting is actually mentioned in this list of sinful things that God allowed people to be turned over to. And we don't really think about boasting many times as being sinful. We just think, oh, well, he's just talking big. He's too big for his britches. He's talking about he can do this and he can do that, and somebody's going to cut him down to size one of these days. But what we don't realize is that boasting is actually a sin. Now, there is a difference between boasting and confidence. There is a difference between boasting and determination. You know, I could stand here before you today and I could say, I'm going to live my Christian life to the best of my ability. Well, that's determination. That's not boasting. If I were to stand before you today and say, well, I'm a better Christian than any of the rest of you, well, that's boasting. And so we need to beware of it. It's difficult sometimes to draw that line between where am I just showing some confidence, showing some determination, showing myself to want to be the best that I can be, which God wants all of us to be the best we can be. But where does that pass over into being a braggart and a boaster that is spoken of. We've got to beware of that, because it is a danger that we face, getting to the point where we're always talking about the great things we did and how great we are. And Jesus tells us quite the opposite. He warns us about that. In the Sermon on the Mount, he talks about those who would go to give their alms, and they'd blow trumpets and so that everybody would be looking at them when they're doing their good deeds. He talked about those who, when they wanted to pray to God, would go stand on the street corner and pray out loud so everybody could see how holy and how righteous they were. He talked about people who, when they would fast, would look all pitiful. Oh, I'm fasting today. It's such a struggle, but I'm so holy, I've got to fast. And he said, that's not the way to do it. He said, you do those good deeds, you do them in secret. Let God see it, but don't make a show to everybody else about it. And that's what a boaster does. A boaster wants to make a show to everybody else. Look at me, look how great I am. And Jesus made it clear that as Christians, we're supposed to be getting everybody to say, look how great God is, instead of how great I am. He says, you do your good works, that if they are seen of men, they may glorify your Father in heaven. Not glorify you. You ever see those folks? After Hurricane Katrina, I saw a few of them. And it seems like after every disaster, there's a celebrity or something would come, and they get the cameras on, and they're presenting a big check. They're going to help out these people who are suffering. Well, now, why do they need all those cameras there to see that? Is that money going to do more good because there were a bunch of cameras there watching it happen? No, we usually have more respect for the people who just do it. They give, but they don't make a big scene out of it. They don't make a big show out of it. Boasting is a sin we need to avoid. Then number 8, deceit. Now deceit is similar to lying, but not entirely the same. Romans 3:13 says, their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips. In court, they have people to take their oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Now see, lying comes into the category of saying something that's not true. But deceit doesn't always carry with it the fact of telling something that's not true. Sometimes deceit means leaving something unsaid. Sometimes deceit means not speaking up and telling the truth. Think about Jacob and his sons. When they had sold Joseph into slavery, they took his coat and covered it in blood. Of course, in today's day and age, we could do DNA testing on it, and he would have realized that was animal blood, not his son's blood, and they'd have been caught. But at that time, they didn't have that. And so they bring this coat covered in blood. Now that was deceitful. They took the coat and covered it. They were deceiving him. But if you read the passage, they never lied to him. They never lied to him. They brought him the coat and said, do you know whose coat this is? Well, of course, they knew he knew whose coat it was. It was a very special coat. It was one of a kind. And so he sees the coat and he says, oh, no doubt my son's been torn to pieces by wild animals. Not a single one of them spoke up to tell him that wasn't true. But they never said, Joseph was killed by wild animals. They just brought him the coat with the deceitful evidence, and he drew the conclusion himself. Well, see, that's still deceit. That's still a sin. Even though they didn't flat out tell a lie, they were still deceiving their father. And that was still wrong. is still sinful. There are times when we deceive. I can remember as a kid, my parents would tell me to go, you can go such and such place. Okay. Afterwards, when I get back, I say, where'd you go? Well, you know, I went such and such place. Where else did you go? Was always the question, because they knew that little trip to that place wouldn't have taken that long. Where else did you go? You must have gone somewhere else that you're not telling me. Children are good at trying to deceive by not volunteering the information. We do the same thing as adults many times. We just don't tell the whole truth. We don't sometimes tell the truth. We don't lie. We just keep the truth to ourselves. Or we just tell the part of the truth that we want to tell and not the whole thing. Then number 9, another sin of the tongue is false teaching. Titus 1 verses 10 and 11. Paul tells Titus, there are many unruly and vain talkers and deceivers, especially they of the circumcision, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole houses, teaching things which they ought not for filthy lucre's sake. They know it's not true, but they teach it anyway because they get paid. They get money, so they teach the falsehoods anyway. Well, now, not all false teachers do it for money. Some of them do it for prestige. Some of them do it because they just have been deceived themselves and believe the false teaching. So there are all sorts of reasons that people teach false teachings. But it is a sinful thing. Now, all of us, at one time or another, have been wrong about something. I heard one time that being wrong, making a mistake, doesn't become a sin until we know we've made the mistake and refuse to correct it. That's when it becomes a sin. We all make mistakes. We all say the wrong things. We all may misquote a verse. But when we know we're doing it and we won't correct it, that's when it becomes a sin. And we need to be aware of that. But there are false teachers out there, certainly many of them. And many of them, of course, are doing it for money. And then the 10th thing that we want to notice is filthy speech. And I would say that the cussing that is so common in our society today would fall more in this category than in the category of cursing that we mentioned earlier. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 8 says, but now put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. We haven't even mentioned blasphemy, but that's another sin of the tongue, speaking evil of God particularly. But filthy communication out of your mouth. That covers a lot of territory. That covers the dirty jokes. That covers the cussing, the swear words, whatever you want to call them. It covers all of those things. Impure language. Things that aren't profitable. Things that don't need to be said and shouldn't be said and nobody needs to hear. We could avoid those things and life would be better. Those are the things we need to get rid of out of our lives. So as we look at all of these sins of the tongue, and I imagine there are more. We mentioned there in that verse, blasphemy is mentioned. There are angry outbursts that could be. There are probably many more sins of the tongue. Yeah, that little bitty member of the body. And yet so many sins are associated with it. You know, in the book of Proverbs, when it lists 6 things that the Lord hates, he has 7 that are an abomination to him. 3 of the 7 things that are listed there, almost half of them, have to do with the tongue. They have to do with that little tongue. It's a dangerous thing. Let's resolve this year to do better with our tongues. To speak the things we ought to speak. To say the things that are for encouragement and building up and helping. And to avoid these sins of the tongue. Will Rogers once said, "So live that you wouldn't be ashamed to sell the family parrot to the town gossip." That's the way to live. If all the things the parrot heard you say, and that parrot repeated them back, would you want anyone else to hear what that parrot had to say? You know, as I get up here to preach and I have this little recorder to record the things I say, I think about what I'm going to say because it's going to be recorded. And still, I make mistakes sometimes. But what if all of our life was recorded? What if everything we said was taken down like it would be in a court of law with a stenographer? Well, guess what? It is. Everything that we think, say, and do is recorded by God. And if we get to the day of judgment and those sinful things that we've thought, said, and done haven't been forgiven us, we're going to have to answer to Him for every one of them. And we won't have an answer. We won't have anything to be able to say. Jesus said that our words would either justify us or condemn us. We need to think carefully each and every day about the things that come out of our mouths. What changes do you need to make in your life this year as far as your tongue goes? What things have you done in the past that perhaps were listed on this list of sins of the tongue that we looked at today that you need to get rid of? Get them out of your life. Remember, when we say the good and kind and loving things with the tongue, it brings joy to us and to others around us. But when we say those mean and ugly and angry and hateful things, it causes trouble and it causes pain and sorrow. Let's each make the determination this morning. Determination, not boasting, because we all know that we'll probably fail sooner rather than later, most likely. But let's make the determination that we're not going to let anything come out of our mouths that shouldn't. Let's make the determination that we're going to do better at guarding that tongue and controlling it. James says, no man can tame the tongue. Well, if you've got a wild animal that you can't tame, what are you going to do with it? You better keep it in a cage. Well, I don't know about you, but my tongue, I've got a cage here to keep it in, don't you? The problem is, we let it out sometimes. We better keep it in that cage. Keep it clamped down tight. Keep it out of trouble. If you're here this morning and you need to be obedient to Christ, perhaps you've never obeyed the gospel. You believe that Jesus is the Son of God, but maybe you've not ever repented of your sins. Maybe you've not used your tongue to confess that Jesus is the Christ. Maybe you've not been willing to be baptized to wash your sins away. You need to do that so that you can become one of His loved members of His body. If you're here and you are a Christian, but perhaps you've struggled with some of these sins of the tongue, and you need the help of the church to overcome those temptations, whatever your need may be, if you need to respond, please do so as we stand and as we sing.